There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
This episode is sponsored by Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in West Virginia. Upcoming featured entertainment includes The Steel Woods on April 26th and Little River Band on May 3rd. Details and tickets at HollywoodCasinoCharlestown.com. Must be 21 to enter the casino floor and attend a show. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome to the newest episode of Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. I'm your host, Jason Fraley, picking the brains of the top filmmakers, musicians, and artists of our time. Tomorrow marks the 15th anniversary of the acclaimed musical Next to Normal premiering on Broadway. I spoke with actor Aaron Tveit, who originated the role of Gabe Goodman when he performed at Wolf Trap in 2018.
We are here with
Aaron Tveit. How you doing?
How you doing? The reason we're talking is because he's coming to wonderful Wolf Trap at the Barnes. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us, Aaron.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, now, what sort of things, if our listeners, they've been following your career on stage and screen, and they love you, and they come out, they get their tickets, they're all excited, what can they expect here?
Well, you know, I try to kind of put these shows together. This is actually a new show. I was at Wolf Trap last year around this time and kind of premiered a piano voice show, and this is a new piano voice show. So, you know, but as I'm putting it together, I realize that, as you said, a lot of people know me from certain things, and so I try to kind of pay respect to that. You know, if they're coming to hear specific things from shows that I've been in, I try to make sure that I put those songs in there, maybe in a new way they haven't heard before. And then from there, you know, I've been doing these concerts for the last couple of years, and I've learned that a successful evening a lot of times comes from me having as much fun as possible and the audience having as much fun as possible. And so from that, I really try to not take myself too seriously and to find some things that maybe are completely unexpected that they may not hear that will, you know, create a very fun moment for everyone in the room.
If you're having fun, there's a good chance we're probably having fun.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Can we get a little sneak peek of, maybe a thing or two on the set list, or is it a total surprise?
Well, there'll definitely be some stuff from the shows that I've been in, Next to Normal and Catch Me If You Can. We may go way back in the time machine and hit some stuff from Rent, which is my first ever job. There's some stuff from Grease. So I'm kind of hitting all those things. And then there may be a couple pop songs worked into the mix and some standards. And, the rest I'll kind of just tease out and say you got to come check out to see what it is.
Awesome. I mean, you mentioned some of the highlights we know from you. But real quick, memories of being Gabe and Next to Normal and just Tom Kitt, Brian Yorkey. Why did those songs, you think, resonate so much?
You know, they just they really are just brilliant, brilliant songwriters for the stage specifically, and storytellers. And, you know, it was such a kind of surprising mix of this rock music with this very, very difficult subject matter of, you know, bipolar schizophrenia. And at first, I just remember then telling people, like, oh, I'm in a musical, and it's about a woman who's, you know, struggling with her mental disorder, and people said, you're in a musical about this? And so I think the kind of juxtaposition of those two things together was ultimately the success of that, you know, and how kind of we just presented, and they presented this very tough subject matter in such a straightforward way. And, you know, the music just lent itself to that kind of emotion. And it was an incredible, incredible thing.
Now, I know that was the big Broadway smash, but you alluded that you also were in the national tour of Rent, also Hairspray national tour, right? I mean, you've done it all.
That's right, yeah. My first two jobs, I got to go on tour with Rent for a year and then on tour with Hairspray for a year. And as a 20-year-old kid, I couldn't have imagined anything better. It was really, really something.
How did that actually come about? Because you grew up in New York and you went to Ithaca College, right?
So yeah, I grew up in New York and I went to Ithaca, and then I was a voice major when I went to Ithaca. I was studying classical literature and classical voice and some opera, and then I switched into musical theater my second year, and then it just so happened that the National Tour of Rent, the music director, had gone to Ithaca, and he came and kind of did a workshop with one of our classes in the musical theater program, and we all kind of did a quote-unquote mock Rent audition for him. And kind of after this audition, he pulled me aside and said, "Hey, man, you're perfect for the show. If anything opens up, can I give you a call? Is there, like, a number I can take?" And I had no experience with anyone in the real world at that point. And I kind of just said, like, "Yeah, sure, dude. If anything comes up, call me." You know, like, yeah, right. And then a couple months later, he called me up and said, "Hey, you know, we have this track opening up. Do you want to come to the final callback in New York?" And I said, kind of in my total naive innocence, like, "Yeah, of course I'll come." And I went down and I somehow got the job and dropped out of school that day. It was absolutely insane.
That's awesome. And then Wicked came after that shortly?
Yeah, so I did those two things, and then I went to New York with Hairspray. That was my first show in New York. And then actually I started working on Next to Normal, kind of off-Broadway. And then between doing Next to Normal off-Broadway and then down in D.C. at Arena.
Yeah, you did it down here at Arena, baby.
We did, yes. So I love Washington. Yeah. But, you know, I have many fond memories of that. But, yeah, so Wicked was kind of around those at that same time, and then Next to Normal on Broadway, and then Catch Me Can on Broadway, and then it all went from there.
Absolutely. And then you'd already left your mark on stage, and then you started you started leaving your mark on our TV sets. Memories of working in Gossip Girl, sir.
Yeah, you know, that was I actually was doing Gossip Girl. There was about a 6 or 8 week stretch where I was doing Next to Normal at night and on the weekends, and shooting Gossip Girl during the day in New York. So I was on a television show and starring on Broadway. And I didn't have a day off for about 8 weeks, but I was 25 and had all the energy in the world. But it was like the greatest thing. I was working on this awesome television show and at the same time starring on stage on Broadway. It was just, talk about a pinch me moment. It was amazing.
Yeah, actually Leighton Meester just came and she joined us a couple, I guess, a year ago or something. She came and sang.
Is that right?
She came and sang at Birchmere, and now you're doing the same thing. You're singing at Wolf Trap. We get all the good
Very
ones.
Very cool. Yeah, she's a great singer as well.
Absolutely. But, and then from there, you kind of pivoted and you start doing some movies too. I want to know what it was like. That must have been an intense experience with Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway on Les Mis.
God.
All those intense close-ups, recording live on set. You know, talk about like how different that was to do it live right there on set.
Yeah, it was a very kind of, for me, it was a very strange culmination of, like, all the work I'd been doing previously in a weird way. It kind of was taking, you know, the on-camera work that I'd been doing, working on, you know, in a couple of movies and on television, and then, of course, combining that with the live element where I was very comfortable just from years of being on stage. And so, for me, I was probably as comfortable as you could be with that, because I was confident that I'd be able to, you know, kind of repeat the live element over and over again. But, you know, but the hard part, of course, was, you know, you're used to doing a live on stage once a night. We would have to do 10, 15 takes over and over and over again. So that was the thing that became really hard with the film, was that we were doing it live, and so we had to do it over and over and over again. And but working with those guys was just absolutely incredible. I mean, Hugh had the most work to do out of everybody. He had like a Herculean mountain to climb, but at the same time, he was the nicest and kind of set such an example for all of us that, you know, it was just, for me as a young actor, it was wonderful to see somebody that I admired so much and how much work he put in. And then, of course, even more than that, the way that he carried himself every day. I mean, I was so struck by that, and I try to always remember that, you know, as I'm working. It was such a shining example of the kind of on-set actor that I wanted to be.
Absolutely. And then Anne, you know, Anne won the Oscar, and she probably said, you know, I learned it all from Aaron.
Yeah, no, she was brilliant, man. I mean, that shot of her singing that song that does not cut away is just one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. She was so brilliant.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. Well, Russell Crowe, I mean, the list goes on and on. We could spend all day talking about it.
But, yeah, we could.
But I definitely want to hit the one, at least a little more recently, that a lot of our listeners and viewers would remember, Danny Zuko in Grease Live.
Yes, another kind of very strange moment that I found myself in of, like, much like Les Mis, like this, all this other work that I've been doing kind of coming together. I mean, that was obviously one night. And so, but, you know, again, because of kind of the stage, you know, experience I had, it kind of helped squash my nerves a little bit to say, like, you know what, we've done this, we've done it in rehearsal, we've done it in dress rehearsal. Yes, there's going to be X amount of millions of people watching in this moment, but I tried not to focus on that. I tried to focus simply on, you know, by that point, that Sunday night performance, we'd run it with all technical elements live with an audience, I think 4 or 5 times at that point. So we were rehearsed. We were, like, ready to go. Now, that being said, anything could have gone wrong that night, and thank goodness it didn't. And it was quite an event. It was quite a 3-hour sprint. You know, I was, because what you didn't say was us all sprinting between stages and scenes and changing during the commercial breaks. And so it was quite an evening.
Oh, we could imagine that while we were sitting there seeing the ads.
Yeah.
You guys were sweating bullets. And
there was one moment, like, after Grease Lightning finished, where I think we had, like, a 3.5-minute commercial break. I was supposed to get in a golf cart, ride to another stage, underdress the whole change. Oh, first of all, get all the sweat off me, underdress the whole change, and then put my Danny Zuko outfit over top. Well, I felt like I didn't have time to wait for the cart, and so I literally finished Grease Lightning. As soon as they said we were to commercial, I sprinted to the other stage, then wiped the sweat off, and then did my change, and then walked into the diner like nothing had happened.
Yeah, let's see Travolta do that.
it was quite a thing, man. It was amazing.
Did you grow up watching that and John Travolta and all that?
Oh, I sure did. Yeah. And you know, I watched it a lot when I was a kid. And Julianne Hough and I, actually, early in the rehearsal process, we all kind of got us all together and we watched the movie. And, man, that movie is amazing. And kind of looking at it now, all these years later, I've got an even greater appreciation. And specifically, the two of them are, like, their performances, they walk this line of kind of, like, absurdity and realism. And the two of them are unbelievable at kind of making this tone and setting this tone of that film, and kind of going back and watching it. It was really, really cool to see how incredible they actually are in that film.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S., the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
You mentioned Julianne Hough. Talk about, I mean, working not only with her, but also Vanessa Hudgens, who came to D.C. in Gigi, they did here at the Kennedy Center.
That's right.
Talk about sort of just what they're like. I mean, because we see them one way on screen, but, you know, behind the scenes, the stuff we don't see, you know, just working with them sort of as people and just their work ethic.
You know, it was very similar to Les Mis. I mean, you kind of get a chance to work with these people that have done all of this and done all this work and are at this level of success. And, you know, I've, in my personal experience, the higher that I've gone with kind of working with those kind of people, the nicer they are. And that was the exact same way with Jules and with Vanessa. And Vanessa and I actually did Rent together at the Hollywood Bowl in 2010. And so I've known her for a long time. And then to kind of see, you know, I knew that a lot of friends had done Gigi with her and said she was amazing in that. And, you know, to kind of see her, I thought she was both of them, but Vanessa, I thought she was incredible in Grease as Rizzo. And, you know, to kind of to watch both of their work ethic and to, you know, come into something that they not necessarily, you know, everyone in that whole thing had different levels of experience with live performance. Obviously, Julianne with being on Dance with the Stars and that live element, but, you know, everybody kind of put all of their, you know, they're different experience levels at the door, and we all got to work, and everyone worked so hard. And, you know, I think that's what really showed on screen in Grease, is that, you know, that couldn't have gone off if everyone wasn't, you know, kind of working their butts off, and they all were. And it was so much fun, and we really forged this little family for that time. It was pretty great.
And directing that little family as a guy who actually grew up in the D.C. area as well, you might know him from Hamilton, Thomas Kail.
Yes, I sure do. Tommy Kail, he was our coach and our quarterback and led us through that craziness. He's a good friend, and I would do anything that guy was doing. Anything he called me up to do, I'd say I'm there. He's really special. It's not a fluke, all the success he's having.
I believe that Grease Live was one of the first that kind of kicked off. We've seen a bunch of them lately here, you know. Or was Peter Pan the first one?
They did Sound of Music and Peter Pan and before that, and The Wiz too, yes. So
kind
of, you know, it was early on. But I just think it's wonderful that they're taking a chance to do these live musicals. And, you know, I mean, not, first of all, going to see a Broadway show or seeing a touring show, it's expensive, and it's such a small group. You know, it's, if you think about, you know, even like a show like Wicked that has 2,000 people there every night, like through the course of a year, you know, 500 performances, that's not really that many people when 15 million can watch a night of these performances. So the fact that, you know, they're able to bring these specific musical theater performances, you know, to households everywhere across America and around the world, I think is just wonderful. And I hope it continues.
Absolutely. And before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I don't ask you about Mike Warren, Graceland.
That's right, yeah.
what was that like doing a regular, because you've done stage shows all these times, and then finally you're doing an episodic TV show.
I loved it. I mean, Graceland was such an incredible experience. Our cast, we absolutely all loved each other, and we shot the pilot in California and then had to all kind of move to South Florida together to shoot the show. And, you know, we all, I think, you know, banded together even closer over that, the fact that we had to live in Florida, you know, kind of out of our own natural element. And, you know, it was working in television is kind of, even though there's very long hours, it's the closest to a regular job I think you can find as an actor, because it's Monday to Friday. Even if you're working till 2-3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes Friday nights, you have Saturday and Sunday off, which is something you do not get in the theater. You only get one day off and you're doing the theater. So the fact that you end up with 2 days, you kind of feel the most like a regular person. And so that it's a very favorable schedule in that way. And I love that story. And, you know, USA was wonderful. And I was very, you know, we were all very sad that it ended. We would have all been very happy if we were doing that for, you know, another 3-4 years. So that was too bad.
We already talked about how you kind of followed in, you know, you had to take a Travolta film role and follow in those footsteps, but you did it again with the Leo DiCaprio role, Catch Me If You Can, turning that into a musical.
That's right.
Was that role as, God, what was his name? Frank? Was that one of your
favorites? Yeah, Frank Abagnale.
Does he still linger with you a while? Do you always think back on that?
I do. That was another one. You know, that was just that I worked on that for a long time before it got to Broadway, and I was obviously a big fan of the movie. And, you know, it was we ran for 6 months on Broadway, and again, it was one of these things that I think we'd all hoped it ran a little longer, but it was such a great experience, and we were all so close. And, you know, I got to know Frank. You know, Frank was around and very much a part of that, and, you know, he's a big-time public speaker, and he would come and speak to our audiences, and he was such a he became like an integral part of that, and that was kind of amazing to get to know him. He's such a fantastic, interesting person who, you know, he would always talk about how he is the embodiment of the American dream because he got a second chance, and that's a lot of about what he would talk about, and that always really resonated with me. You know, he did all these things, but he paid back all the money that he stole, and he's truly been given a second chance, and he talked about that's the real, the great thing about America, and I always thought that was amazing.
Definitely. All right. Final question. Let's bring it all the way full circle back to, you know, you're coming back to the D.C. area and how, you know, you were just at Arena Stage. You got the Helen Hayes and all that for When Next to Normal was here. And you earlier you mentioned you said, I love D.C. Why are you so excited to come back here at Wolf Trap?
You know, I have such great experiences there from Next to Normal. And I mean, I had such a blast last year at Wolf Trap. But every time I'm in D.C., you know, I think that it's kind of one of the only American cities that feel reverential in a way. It feels grand. It feels like kind of an old European city. I know that I think that's what it was designed to feel like. And I don't know, I always feel, you know, no matter what's going on in the world or in the country, every time I'm there, I feel a sense of pride in our country in a way that I don't get from other cities necessarily. It feels very American. And I always feel great about that. It has a good feeling to me whenever I'm there.
We love it. Well, we're so excited to see you. What's next for Aaron? You got anything in the hopper after the tour?
I have a couple movies. I just shot a movie in New Orleans, Out of Blue, that should kind of be out this coming year. I have one actually that premieres streaming on demand and limited release tomorrow called Created Equal. So check it out on iTunes or whatever streaming service you prefer. But just looking to see, you know, do some more concerts, and we'll see what the next thing blows me towards.
All right. Well, first, everyone come out to see him at Wolf Trap on Friday the 26th and Saturday the 27th. Aaron, thanks so much. You've been generous with your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the Fame with Jason Fraley. Our theme music is Scott Buckley's Clarion. Remember to give us a 5-star rating if you like what you hear. We'll see you next time.